and welcome to Elder Care Issues. It's another Saturday. I'm Mark Van Wagner. And, of course, this program is brought to you by the Utah Care Planning Council. And before we get into our special guest, I just wanted to say hi and good morning to Tom Day. Hi, Tom. How are you?
Hi, Mark.
Nice to have you here. We're going to talk about some of your very, very special seminars and workshops. We're getting close to them, aren't we?
We are.
And let's tell everybody, too, that if they want to hear any of the issues that we've talked about in previous shows, they can just log on to your website, right?
That's correct. They can go to longtermcarelink.net on the Internet, or just type in long-term care on any search engine, and it'll pop up number one. And on that page that comes up, there's some instructions to go to the previous programs. So we're recording these programs or putting them on the Internet for folks to listen
Excellent.
To.
Excellent. And we'll be able to pick up any of the subjects. And this is information that concerns all of us. I mean, we are, as a society, we are getting older. They call it the graying of America. 10,000 people a day turn 50 in this country. The baby boomers are now hitting what they call their senior years. And everybody is changing. AARP is now split off into three magazines from one, you know, to catch the various ages of getting older and growing older. But one of the things that you have to do, and we've talked about this before, is that, and much like your taxes, there are a number of benefits that are available to seniors, a number of them. But it's not the government's responsibility to plan or to even let you know what they're aware of. That is your responsibility to do the discovery portion of what is available out there, how you can plan for it. And so, and the best thing you can do, seriously, is go to someone who knows about this. Go to a certified senior planner, you know, like Tom. Attend one of his workshops. And we'll talk about that a little bit later on. But our special guest today is Calvin Curtis from Vancott Bagley in Cornwall and McCarthy. But Vancott Bagley, now there is a name that you that is almost a household name here in Utah, isn't it? It really is.
Absolutely. Mark, good morning. Thank
good
you. It's
morning.
Nice to be here.
Nice to be here. Now, you are the senior care, the chairman estate, the chairman of estate planning for Vancott Bagley.
Yes, that's correct.
Boy, congratulations.
Well, thank you.
That is what a prestigious firm, number one.
Absolutely.
And you are the elder law expert, right, at Vancott Bagley?
Well, I suppose that's true.
Okay. And now, how long have they started specializing in elder law? It's relatively new, isn't it? Or has it been around for a while?
You know, elder law really probably 10 to 15 years.
About 10 to 15 years?
Yeah, which is about how long I've been practicing elder law as well.
Now, why did you specialize in elder law? Because, you know, everyone is, you know, you specialize, there's mineral law, you know, and dealing with leases and different. Why elder law?
Well, first off, let's define what it is.
Yeah, what is elder law?
Elder law is sort of all of the legal issues that pertain to seniors. That can be estate planning, that can be housing, it can be nursing home care, litigation. It can be Medicaid and government benefits like Social Security. It can be Medicare. Elder law also has a component of, because we specialize in government benefit programs, we can also help individuals with special needs trusts, for example, for disabled individuals, whether they're seniors or not, and supplemental needs trusts, and helping the disabled retain, say, a personal injury award or an inheritance, while at the same time retaining government benefits like Medicaid.
Mm-hmm. We're going to get into Medicaid a little bit, but first, you know, let's talk about estate planning. And how important is it for us to go to an elder law specialist like you, you know, at Vancott Bagley, and instead of maybe going down to a Chuck-O-Rama and paying $75 and having it all done for us down there? I mean, you wouldn't recommend that, would you, in doing that side of an estate planning?
Well, I mean, I think elder law has a number of special issues that deserve some special expertise and consideration. Typically, folks are going to want to have a will. In Utah, there's a sense of perhaps we want to avoid probate. But a will is a very important component of an estate plan. It permits someone to designate where their property will go, also designate who their personal representative should be upon their death. And that requires some consideration. People also want to talk and think about revocable trusts as well. And in my view, trusts sometimes are oversold. I think there's maybe three or four good reasons to have a revocable trust or a living trust. First off, it can help avoid probate.
Mm-hmm.
But many people don't fully fund their trust, and so they may end up in probate anyway. A revocable trust is very important if people have an estate in excess of $1.5 million, so they can take advantage of the estate mm-hmm. tax unified mm-hmm. credit. A trust can also be very important when we have, as people age, and they're concerned about disability and being able to manage their financial affairs, because then a trustee, whether that's an independent trustee or a trusted loved one or child, can help manage their affairs as well. You know, single individuals, widows and others, widowers, frequently as they age, find a revocable trust useful.
Huh. What about if we're just, let's say we don't have an estate of $1.5 million, let's say we're worth about $750,000 or $500,000, should we get a trust? Should we go that route, or is it even necessary? Because you mentioned that probate is neither expensive nor burdensome in Utah. You know, so estates, you mentioned, and I think that's a good point, are oversold. You know, what would someone that's worth maybe, you know, quarter of a mil to $750,000, what would that person's best avenue be in getting ready?
I mean, again, I think in that situation, the issue really becomes sort of twofold. Is the individual capable of handling their financial matters?
Mm-hmm.
If they are, they don't necessarily need a revocable trust unless perhaps they have strong feelings about probate avoidance. I'll talk
okay.
more about that in
all
a minute.
Right. Okay.
But, you know, if as people age and you know, all of the issues that are attendant to that, if that makes it more difficult for them to handle and manage their own financial affairs, then they probably ought to think about a revocable trust, because that can enable the appointment of a trustee who can help them.
I see. You mentioned many people don't fully fund their trust. It may end up in probate anyway. What does that mean, not funding your trust?
Yeah, good question. Thank you. First off, the probate process in Utah, particularly in Salt Lake County, is pretty simple. There's a sitting probate court that sits every Wednesday morning, and upon the death of an individual, we can typically have a personal representative appointed in as quickly as 4 or 5 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's nothing further required under the probate code. The personal representative can administer one's estate. By fully funding a trust, all of the titled assets of an individual, most particularly real property, have to be conveyed into the trust by a deed.
Mm.
And many people either miss that or they overlook certain property that they own. For example, if you've got a family home and you want that not to pass through probate, then you have to do a deed conveying that home to your trust. Perhaps more importantly, if you have a retirement condominium or something like it, particularly in another state, then you want to deed that property to your trust. It's one thing to go through probate in Utah, another thing to go through mm-hmm. probate in several different states.
Mm-hmm.
So people will have, or they will acquire a condominium in Mesquite, for example, or something like it, and then they overlook that. There are various other assets that people sometimes overlook getting into the trust, a bank account in one's own name. And, of course, many assets, IRAs, life insurance, and so on, have their own beneficiary designations. So we're not too concerned about those.
Oh, good. Let's financial powers of attorney. How valuable is that to a senior? And in what situation should we seek for that?
I think they're indispensable, Mark. And this is an area where the divergence between sort of the general practitioner and the elder law specialist can really come into play.
Okay.
A financial power of attorney is simply a designation or the appointment of an agent to handle your financial affairs. That can be effective immediately, for example, and remain in effect even if one becomes incapacitated. That's a so-called durable power of attorney.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or we can do what's called a springing power of attorney, which is a document that essentially lies dormant but springs into existence, if you will, upon obtaining a letter from a physician, for example, that says an individual's presently unable to handle their financial affairs. And both of them have their place. More and more often, I think, we're seeing springing powers become employed. And again, without a good financial power of attorney, the risk someone runs is incapacity or incompetency or something like it, and no one can handle their affairs. And therefore, we have to go into court and have a conservator appointed for them.
Mm.
And by affairs, I mean all the things that you would think about. Bank accounts, for example, dealing with Social Security, dealing with a safety deposit box, mm-hmm. dealing with the IRS, and so on.
You know, like all of a sudden, maybe mom is suffering from Alzheimer or some form of dementia, and she starts writing checks to everything and buying everything, and you notice that, you know, something is a little off there. That might be a good time maybe to check into this kind of a thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And even before then, mm-hmm. But certainly in that situation. And unfortunately, Mark, I think one thing we're seeing more and more of is individuals taking advantage of these powers of attorney.
See, I wanted to talk about that, you know. And in what way are they taking advantage of these?
Well, the way I describe it is we've got, I think, what Tom Brokaw described and perhaps others as the greatest generation.
Yes.
The folks who fought World War II, who lived in the Depression, who saved money. And now as they've aged, the succeeding generations, maybe a little bit more spoiled than they ever were,
mm-hmm.
maybe a lot more needs and more wants. And so when they're appointed as an agent for mom or dad, sometimes mom and dad's own funds become a tempting source to help them with their own financial issues. And I think that's an issue that we'll see more and more of over time. And it's a real concern to folks in the elder law community.
Well, isn't this this transfer of wealth the largest transfer of wealth in the history of mankind between the greatest generation and the succeeding generation?
You know, I'll bet you're right there.
You know, that's just saying it's just unbelievable amounts of money are going to be changing hands in the next 10, 15 years. And you're right, because I have heard about this. I've heard about a son who had an MBA, and the mom said, well, I'm going to trust everything to him, and made that person. And another brother, you know, came checking into it and found out that there was like, you know, $200,000 missing from the estate, and called his brother into an accounting, you know, for them. It seems that he was financing or playing the stock market with his own, taking money out of this thing. What is the recourses for the other siblings to do in a case like that?
Well, I think that in your example, they've done the appropriate thing. They've demanded an accounting and perhaps conducted an investigation. And sought to protect their mother's own interests. I think
mm-hmm.
that's very important. There are laws, essentially anybody appointed as an agent on a power of attorney is what we call a fiduciary, and they can be held to account, and in egregious situations can be brought into a civil court action for recovery of the funds. Unfortunately, I've been involved in a number of situations like that. Where we've had individuals impersonate their parents in telephone
Ooh.
Situations to engage in the sale of securities and misdirect their mail so that they were intercepting the checks.
Oh, ouch. You know, I think about this as a mom and dad. Now, here is the greatest generation. They did go through the Depression. They fought the wars. They saved. They literally built America back up to where it is right now, and we owe them a lot. And the last thing I would think they would want is their children to fight. And unfortunately, I'll bet you see a lot of that.
Yes, we do.
You know?
More so all the time.
So what can mom and dad do to make sure or at least minimize that from happening? Saying, look, kids, if any of you fight, you're out of the will. Or can you drop some sort of provision saying, I will not have, you know, contention at my funeral. I will not have you fighting over money or objects or different things. What's the best thing a mom and dad could do to avoid that kind of a scene?
I think, really, I'll use the term disclosure. And then also the terms, you know, discussion and understanding.
Okay.
I think the more children know about their parents' affairs, really in an appropriate way, the less contention and concern there will be. If the issue is concern about what type of funeral mom or dad would want, they ought to spell that out. And they ought to make sure their children are aware of their wishes, so that we can avoid any kind of a contest there. With respect to financial matters, I think it's very important that children have a basic understanding of perhaps their parents' financial situation in appropriate circumstances, mm-hmm. that perhaps more than one individual is involved as a personal representative or as a trustee, and that there be a clear understanding of what the estate plan is and how funds are to be distributed upon the death of an individual to try and minimize that very kind of conflict. A lot of times it isn't so much that children want something so much themselves, it's that they're concerned that perhaps they're being taken advantage of mm-hmm. by their siblings, mm-hmm. in that someone has an unfair position. Someone's living with mom and therefore is using more of mom's resources and has begun to intertwine their own lives with mom or dad's lives. Mm-hmm. It's all of those kinds of issues.
What's the biggest problem that you see that could be avoided by using elder law and an elder law attorney like yourself?
Well, really all the issues that we've talked about.
Yeah.
I'd like to think that through appropriate planning we can avoid many of the issues that we've discussed in terms of people taking advantage of a senior, putting proper accounting mechanisms into place, making sure they have a solid and a well-grounded estate plan, and discussion of many of these family-type issues to avoid conflicts, making sure that mom or dad have appropriate care. And that they're not being taken advantage mm-hmm. of in that situation.
Excellent. We're talking with the chairman for estate planning at Vancott Bagley, Calvin C. Curtis, with Vancott Bagley, Cornwall, and McCarthy. And his office in Salt Lake City, they're in downtown Salt Lake City at 50 South Main, Suite 1600. And you can contact him at 237-0367. That's 237-0367. And if you were to go on a search and put in long-term care, anywhere in the world, doesn't matter if you're in Japan, China, Germany, wherever, the number one website that's going to pop up is Tom Day's. Tom, if that is true. And you've got to be really proud of that, because this is something you are very, very passionate about. You know, elder care planning strategies for families with the Utah Care Planning Council. Tell us just briefly about the Utah Care Planning Council. What is the Utah Care Planning Council?
The Utah Care Planning Council is a team of experts in various areas of elder care, and we've come together with common goals. Basically, we want to help the public solve some of these problems that Cal has talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very passionate about it because I went through it with all four of our parents, my
yes.
wife and I did, and we made a lot of mistakes. We want to help people avoid those mistakes. We want to provide resources for people where they can come and learn what to do and how to prepare and plan ahead, the exactly what Cal has mentioned. I want to mention to you, Mark, that Cal is a member of our team
in
Salt Lake City, and he's one of the presenters at our workshop. And he's also available for consultations, as are all of us when people attend our workshops. As part of their fee for the workshop, they get a consultation with one of the experts from the Utah Care Planning Council.
Oh, that's invaluable. When is your next workshop? It's coming up real quickly here.
It is. September 23rd. That will be at the Salt Lake Community College Miller campus. And that's from 7 to 9:30 in the evening. And they get all kinds of great stuff with that. They get a workbook. They get a CD that's got two textbooks on it, as well as all of Utah's elder care resources. They get to hear from six elder care experts, which includes Cal, who is our elder law attorney. We have a care manager. We have a home care expert and an expert on care resources and facilities. I talked about financing the cost of care and coming up with money for that. We have the number one reverse mortgage specialist in the state who's a member of our team, and we have a financial planner. And it's a great team. I'm just so fortunate that we've got the best people in the valley to work together on this effort.
Well, what is great about this is you have kept the price so low, basically just to cover your costs. No one's making any money off this. This is just to help cover the cost of the workbooks and the you're getting hundreds of dollars. I mean, it could be worth thousands of dollars depending on your situation. But the CDs that you give out, the workbooks, the consultation with your people, the Utah Care Planning Council, all the different experts in different fields. fields. I suggest everybody attend this or attend one of the workshops coming up. It is coming up, the next one, September 23rd, which is Thursday, at the Larry Miller campus, right? And now that's 9750 South 3rd West in Sandy, Utah.
That's correct. And they can go online on the website to careforutah.com, one word, and learn all about it. Or they can call us at 298-8676.
298-8676. Thank you, Tom. Now getting back to our estate planner and chairman for estate planning at Vancott Bagley, our elder law expert, Calvin Curtis. Calvin, let's switch gears here a little bit. Let's talk about Medicaid. I hear so many things about Medicaid that I'm not even sure which is true or what's not true. They're going to come and take my house. I have to wait so many years if I transfer assets, or, you know, what? How would I find out more about Medicaid and about planning for it? And am I eligible? Is everyone eligible? Or is it charity? And I don't want anything to do, because I've heard people say, "I'm not me, it's charity. I'm not going to take advantage of
Medicare." All really good questions. And in the time that we have left, we can cover some of those issues. I'd also like to encourage people to attend the workshop, where we'll talk about it in more detail. I think the first issue on any discussion about Medicaid, is it the right thing to do?
Yeah.
And really, I think that's an individual decision that's best made by a client. I don't try to take a position one way or another on the sort of the ethical or the value issues. My job is to help people understand what the law is. I think there are questions about why people may want to take advantage of Medicaid. And I think the very first question I would always ask is to make sure that they're receiving adequate care. Most nursing homes that I'm familiar with, if not all, in Utah, there isn't a difference between the care a Medicaid recipient receives and the care that a private pay patient receives. Mm. There's not a Medicaid wing. Most of the employees don't know who's receiving Medicaid and who isn't. The business manager might. The food and other care that they receive ought to be the same. But that is an issue that I'd want to be sure of, particularly if it were my own parents in a care center. I think another issue is the strategies that folks have to engage in many times to become eligible for Medicaid may result in a serious loss of independence. Mm. And as an elder law attorney, I'm very concerned about that. Many times I'll have the children of elderly parents come to me and want to engage in Medicaid planning for their parents, and my very first concern is making sure that we're doing what's best for mom or dad.
That's right.
And that mom or dad become my client, not the children. Because if you're divesting yourself of all of your assets, you're also divesting yourself of your independence.
Ooh, that's right. And I'm so glad that you take that, because to me, I don't think the children are owed anything. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
You know, like, you owe me this, mom and dad. You owe this to me. I think that is very selfish and very one-sided. And I'm glad that you're taking care of mom and dad, because it is their money that you're dealing with. And it's not the children's money.
That's right.
They didn't earn that. Mom and dad did.
That's right.
So if... Are they planning on, let's get rid of the house, let's give it to the kids, let's give gifts to all the grandchildren and so forth so they can afford Medicaid? What, do you have to have a, is there a spending, you have to, how does it work? How does Medicaid work?
Sure. Let's talk about that in a little bit more detail. Before we do, though, let me just sort of come full circle and indicate that the majority of people in a nursing home, probably a slight majority, do receive some form of Medicaid assistance. And to the extent that people use the term welfare when they think about Medicaid, I think it's important that we keep expenditures in mind. The federal government spends a lot of money on Medicaid, mm-hmm. No doubt about that.
Oh, yes.
But we also spend a lot of money in our involvement in Iraq, in sending people back to the moon or to Mars, mm-hmm. in crop disaster relief, flood relief, and so on. So I think we have to keep it in perspective. Medicaid eligibility, quickly, a single individual, for example, can have $2,000 in assets. They can mm-hmm. have a car. They can have a funeral plan. And the home is exempt initially, but it's subject to what's called lien recovery. And their income typically is applied to the cost of their care, except they're permitted to receive $45 a month. So you can see for a single individual, we've got to get their assets underneath
$2,000.
Typically that is done through gifting programs, and I'll talk more about the look-back period in a moment, or annuities or some other plan. If we have a husband and wife situation, Medicaid essentially divides their assets. There's a financial divorce, if you will, and a certain amount is allocated to what we call the community spouse living in the community, and a certain amount allocated to what we call the institutionalized spouse in the nursing home. That institutionalized spouse then has to pay down or spend down their share to under $2,000 again. So in that situation, much of the planning revolves around the use of annuities and other techniques that's designed to spend down the institutionalized spouse's share for the benefit of the community spouse. Again, the home is exempt initially, but once an individual begins receiving Medicaid assistance, Medicaid starts keeping score. And upon the death of an individual, Medicaid may attempt to recover the cost of the care that they receive.
What is the look back? Do they, I mean, it's if, how far do they look back to see if you've transferred assets to get that down to the $2,000?
Well, there's a couple of tests for that. Essentially, the concept, Mark, is when a person gives away assets, Medicaid wants to treat them as if they had, you know, if they'd retained their assets, what amount of nursing home care would that have paid for? And so there's a formula to compute that. Right now in Utah, the so-called average cost of nursing home care computed by the state is $3,618 a month. Actually, the cost of care along the Wasatch Front is probably more than that. But the idea is that if someone gives, for example, a $36,000 gift, if they'd retained that money, it would have paid for 10 months worth of nursing
home
care.
That's right. Yeah.
At $3,618 a month. And so then the idea becomes that Medicaid will not provide nursing home Medicaid assistance for that 10-month period. Now, a lot of people are familiar with the overall 36-month look-back period, and that gets a little complex. We could deal with that at the workshop.
Yes.
But through appropriate planning, an individual can make a large gift, for example, and limit their look-back period to 36 months. But the general idea that people ought to understand is that when you're making gifts, Medicaid will not provide assistance for the period of time that the amount of that gift would have paid for.
I'll tell you, there are so many issues that we need to know about, and the best thing you can do is attend one of these workshops. Next one is coming up on the 23rd of this month at the Larry Miller campus at 9750 South 3rd West. You can call the Utah Care Planning Council at 298-8676, 298-8676, or you can go online at careforutah.com. That's www.careforutah.com, and make sure you register for this next workshop. It is invaluable. Or you can contact Vancott Bagley if you need an elder law attorney right now and talk to Calvin Curtis, and his number is 237-0367. Or again, the easiest thing to do is just go online, careforutah.com, or call the Utah Care Planning Council, and you can answer questions, refer people to the right expert in whatever they need, from elder law to long-term care to insurance needs or whatever.
That's correct.
Okay, so I can't believe how fast this time goes. I mean, really, the best thing you need to do is just go to the workshop. We can't cover this in a half an hour. But Calvin, you did a great job. Thank you for being our guest today.
Well, thank you, Mark, for
having me. We appreciate that. And you work with some wonderful attorneys.
Absolutely.
You
it's
really
a terrific
do.
Firm.
It really is. And I'll tell you, Tom, you have some pretty high-caliber people on your Utah Care Planning Council.
We're very fortunate. We're very proud of the help that we can offer people. Thanks, Mark.
This is Elder Issues, and I'm Mark Van Wagner, and thank you for joining us. We'll see you next week, same time, same place, right here on AM 1060 KDYL. Have a great Saturday.